Dive into the start of summer at Whole Foods Market. Check out their summer splash event with sales on fresh organic produce, organic strawberries, and a fan favorite sale on Ben & Jerry's and Talenti. Explore deals on grill-friendly meats like organic air-chilled chicken breast, beef and chicken kebabs, all with no antibiotics ever from our meat department. Plus, grab easy sides from prepared foods and cool off with refreshing drinks. Kick off your summer and shop in store or online at Whole Foods Market today.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, here we go on a Monday. It's Cody and Gold. Hope everybody had a fantastic weekend. We are loaded with Chiefs today on the show. Of course, your official Chiefs radio partner. Coming up around 10:45, you'll hear from Steve Spagnuolo, Tonel Passanio, Chad Henne, and rookie linebacker Willie Gay Jr. And in the noon hour today, one-on-one with DeMarcus Robinson. So we're jam-packed. This is day three of full padded practices for the Kansas City Chiefs. I guess day four, technically.
And obviously, we'll have all of these amazing interviews on every show during this entire Chiefs training camp. So you can expect exclusive interviews right here on 610. Do we call them one-on-ones when it's really two-on-one?
It's still one-on-one. It's still a one-on-one interview.
That's a three-way at that point.
It is.
We got a DeMarcus Robinson three-way coming your way at 12:10. Is that how we should say this? I feel like people 100%. Are going to be really confused about our pitching of interviews. One-on-one with DeMarcus Robinson.
Yeah, we'll just roll with that. I mean, it's not inaccurate to go the way that Ryan wants us to promote it. It would not be inaccurate that way. So that is coming up. We are loaded today on the show. Excited about that. And you'll hear also a little bit from what Clyde Edwards-Helaire had to say this morning on Fesco in the Morning. Really good stuff from him just about what is achievable for him this season. How realistic are those goals for Clyde Edwards-Helaire? We also had a chance. We spent some time even this weekend, too, the three of us. There hasn't been a whole lot of that just because of COVID and everything like that. I feel terrible, though. I have to admit, I feel terrible about Friday night. So we're at Cody's house. He was nice enough to have us over. We were doing some work stuff, but also just having dinner. You were very nice and made some dinner. We're out on Cody's patio. We're having these great tacos that your wife, I want to make it clear that your wife made, not you.
I helped.
Uh-huh, sure. Your wife made, not you. And Desmond, who was your son, it was his birthday over the weekend, I'm there, I'm talking, and I talk with my hands a lot. We're on the radio, but I just to
fill
you in.
It's not TV, Gold.
Yeah, but I talk with my hands a lot. Cody knows this. And your son like kept sneaking up behind me as I'm talking, and I must have elbowed your son twice. Maybe three times as we're talking on the patio.
You gotta be a little more careful.
We're over here, and Desmond just like kept sneaking. I had no idea. I felt awful. I felt even worse afterwards.
By the way, he doubled down and made it worse because he tried to pick him up.
Well, I felt bad.
Kids don't like that. Kids don't like to be picked up.
It was not good. It was not good. Serta's looking at me like, how many times are you gonna elbow this guy? So I felt bad about that, but I appreciate you having us over. And I did try your elote dip, right?
Elote, yeah.
Elote.
You had some elote.
Uh huh. Yeah.
Didn't it mix? Wasn't it good? See, look, you can find new foods to enjoy. I mean, it's essentially just corn salsa, so it's not, not going to be offensive.
It was solid. Yeah, it was solid. So that was a nice weekend. Hope everybody had a fantastic weekend. You guys can hit us up on Twitter at Alex Gould, at Cody B. Tapp, and at Steven Serta. So it is busy right now with the Chiefs and padded practices underway. And something that we had talked a lot about back during the last dance from Michael Jordan came up again over the weekend, and that's because Eric Bieniemy said this about Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes.
Kudos to Pat. He's done a heck of a job. He's had a great career so far, but you guys have been around him. You know him. He's a competitive prick, okay? He's a great kid, but he's a competitive prick. He wants to improve at everything he possibly can improve upon. He wants to be the best at whatever he can do. And along the way, he wants to make sure that he's leading the guys. He wants to be held accountable by his peers. But also, too, he just wants to work. And that's what you love about being around him every single day.
That was the comment of the weekend. No doubt about that. You have your offensive coordinator in the most complimentary way possible, by the way, calling him a competitive prick. And it did remind me a lot, I think for a lot of people, too, about The Last Dance and Michael Jordan. In The Last Dance, we saw clearly Michael Jordan everyone fits in that same category. The competitiveness about anything, also trying to find different ways to motivate you. And we saw it firsthand last year during the regular season and that blowout win against the Chicago Bears, Mahomes counting on his hands how many draft picks were, you know, how many picks were in between the Bears and the Chiefs. And but then after the game, you have Mahomes, you know, that wasn't what it was about, like that downplaying it in the press conference. And that's kind of how he's approached things and how I would expect him to approach it. But when it's in the heat of battle, he is going to be that competitive, whether it's remembering things, whether it's going to be away from the football field. That's where my mind went right away after hearing that comment from Eric Bieniemy.
I think it's a good thing now. There's no question.
Oh, I love it.
Right? He pushes people. No one's afraid to say. And Bieniemy feels confident enough that when he comes out in this press conference and says Mahomes is a prick, right? That Mahomes isn't going to like blow this thing out of the water or be mad that that's what he said. Because clearly Eric Bieniemy has said this to Patrick Mahomes' face. And Patrick Mahomes probably takes it as a point of pride. Totally agree with all of that. It was tremendous. The only fear is, does it ever push anybody out eventually? Because that does happen in sports event. Like, you can be a big enough prick to, like, push people out in sports. Okay, that can occur. I think I'm seeing that now. I tell you that that's what I think I see now with Bill Belichick. And a history of allowing people and players to leave suggests that that's the way it is. Because enough guys have left New England and said, playing for that guy sucks. And it's because he makes our life hard, because he is hyper-competitive, but he also treats us like dirt. And I think that that's where Mahomes' line has been great. He pushes people to be better the way they respect Tom Brady, even now in the early going, but he doesn't seem to be pushing anybody out by treating them poorly. And I do think that there's a clear line in the sand. So just as long as he avoids that, great. Because I think, you know, like you could say that about, you know, Michael Jordan, right? Or some of the other great players who've come around. But for the most part, Michael Jordan, the only guys who ever left Michael Jordan were the guys he kicked off the team, not the other way around.
I think it's different by the sport, too. Like, if sure. You're saying, are you concerned about that ever being... One, no, I'm not concerned whatsoever. In fact, I love it. I love seeing that. We even had this discussion during The Last Dance and, like, you know, being successful. And I think you kept making the point. You're like, hey, to be successful, you don't need to be a prick. I think that was, like, your exact take that you had
on it.
You
don't have to be a... Yes, correct.
Okay,
you don't.
But I don't think there's a difference between when you're being competitive and in around it versus away from it.
Competitive environment.
You know, Eric Bieniemy said competitive, you know, being a competitive prick, and that's how he phrased it, whereas you could view it in a more negative way.
Well, otherwise, there's a difference between a competitive prick and just a prick. Like a guy who's just mean all the time.
Right.
Because they're just like that way all the time. Or like, hey, we're in a football practice.
Yes.
We're playing ping pong. We're playing a video game and I want to win. This is what I want to do.
And
I do think that there's
EB's,
a distinction between those two.
And I think that's that last part there is what EB is more describing about Patrick Mahomes. And I think even if you want to go broader and you think it's going to evolve into something else at some point in time, NBA versus the NFL is just a different makeup. And I think the coaching is also different. Phil Jackson is one of the best, you know, basketball coaches, I should say, period. But just the makeup of the coach on a daily basis in the NBA versus a coach on a daily basis or on game day in the National Football League, and just the chemistry in a locker, you're dealing with not just 15 guys on a roster or 20, you know, you're dealing with 53 men on a roster. I think there's a lot of that.
And a physical sport that requires that you to have kind of an edge sometimes.
Yes, it's still a 6-month plus long season, but it's 16 games and all that. I think it's a lot different just in terms of on the negative end that could happen from it. I think most Chiefs fans, and certainly I did, looked at it and like, okay, I absolutely love that comment. More reason to love that guy is going to be your quarterback for at least the next 12 years here in Kansas City.
This is what Patrick Mahomes said, by the way. He doesn't seem offended by the comment by Bieniemy.
It's just kind of in our nature, I think, not even just me and EB's name. We love to compete. We're fiery. We love to go out there every single rep. We act like it's the last rep that we have to win. And I think when you have a lot of guys on the team that are like that, it's when you get the best on Sunday. So I'm going to go out there and compete every single rep, and I'm going to have that fire every single time.
By the way, there is something to like being able to say that about yourself, but also understand that's who EB is. Like, don't you get the impression that that's who Eric Bieniemy was as a player? Like a guy who just never gives you a break. You're like, come on, man, can we just take this one playoff? Because that's how 99.9% of us are. Like, occasionally for a second, you just like let off the gas for just a second. In a practice, in a baseball practice, you take a goofy swing, right? In a football practice, you like goof around and like, you know, but it doesn't seem like Mahomes does that. He doesn't seem to waste reps. even in the case where, like, he's out here throwing no-look passes in practice, he actually plans on doing that based on the fact we've seen him do it, or he throws it behind his back. I feel like there's a chance eventually he's going to actually do that. And I think that that's where I'm okay. Like, I love those comments because it's true to form of how you would describe Mahomes.
And we'll ask DeMarcus Robinson about those comments from EB. What does he see in the huddle? He spent a couple years now around Patrick Mahomes. His thoughts on that. Again, DeMarcus Robinson going to join us exclusively here on 610 coming up in the noon hour today on Cody and Gold. We're also about 35 minutes or so away from hearing from Steve Spagnuolo and also rookie linebacker Willie Gay Jr. Their live press conferences again here on 610 Sports Radio, your official Chiefs radio partner. The Royals over the weekend, though, also were back at it and trying to complete a four-game series, and they'll do that ultimately tonight, fourth and final game, and need the split, first of all. But even if you look past what happened this weekend, we'll talk more about what we've seen from Josh Staumont and Trevor Rosenthal and Jorge Soler here recently over the last couple games. But next is the Cincinnati Reds, and that at one point did not look all that great in terms of getting games in, because we know with COVID and the positive test that the Reds had and their flight, people were doing flight tracking. You can't blame me on this one. It wasn't me. Somebody else did it. But apparently their flight today was canceled. There was some good news that came out in the last couple of hours, though, from John Heyman, Radio.com Sports MLB Insider, that the Reds had no new positive tests. Nobody tested positive today. And so it seems like they're on track, but it's something to watch. This would be the first time we're even talking, Cody, about an opponent and their positive test impacting a Royals game. And there's a slight chance that happens, but a lot better news now at this point in time. Nobody wants to see games not get in. The Royals have been fortunate. Yes, they had the doubleheader that they had to play Saturday, but that was weather-related, like typically what you would normally see.
A normal
doubleheader. It looks like they're going to get by with this, and hopefully the Reds cannot cause any issues with the Royals schedule.
The scary part is that baseball is trying to find workarounds now. I think the Royals are probably going to play the Reds tomorrow. Looks like they're probably, they had no more positive test. They did what you're supposed to do. The way that baseball wants to move forward, which is one positive test can't derail this whole thing, which is what we were seeing happening kind of in the early going, right? The Reds miss a game if one guy tests positive, but you can't let it linger for days. The problem is baseball's trying to go even further than that. Heyman over the weekend, yesterday to be exact, said that one of the rules that baseball is trying to employ is that even if you were still testing positive, you can play in 10 days and will be allowed back 14 days even with continued positives, somehow based on the reasoning that the contagiousness level will dissipate to the point that you're not worried about it in order to play. And this is stupid. This is really stupid. Like, I'm sorry. Yeah, I think teams should go back. I don't think you should hold back teams for 4 days just because guys test positive. I think you move those players who test positive away, you isolate them, they don't get to play for 2 weeks, and you call in your taxi squad like everything else. And what I'm fearful of is that they're trying to implement this new rule because the Cardinals are mad. Like, I'm sorry you lost your whole team, Cardinals, and you'd like them back after 10 days. And probably the players want to come back, so they might agree to this too, and it's stupid. Contagiousness dissipating is not the reason to do it. Getting in games is the only thing that matters. Yeah. You're at a competitive disadvantage if your guys are gone, but that's just reality. I don't like that they're considering pushing up the timeline for already positively tested players. That seems incredibly irresponsible.
So it has to be approved, I guess, but if you test positive, you can apply to return to play in 10 days, even if you continue to
test positive,
and then you're very likely to be allowed back after 14 days. Now, I guess this actually does follow
CDC guidelines.
So there's not from a health in, there's not like anything wrong they're doing. What's weird is why now would baseball go with this approach where you've already missed these games? I think the answer why now is that here we are, we're in the middle of August. It's August 17th. We're getting closer to where it's going to be even more challenging than what we already saw with the Cardinals to make up games. Like, the Cardinals missed what, 15 games, and they're doing all these doubleheaders and consecutive days to make it work, to catch up games, to get to 58 games even. I think what this is a response from baseball, seeing how long the Cardinals were out of action, knowing that there's a decent chance another baseball team this year is going to have to miss at least one game because of a COVID test. And what they have had happen with a couple different players is that they're not
coming back
through it, and you know, even had the issue with testing with Juan Soto,
sure,
in particular. So I think that this response, making sure it doesn't impact their postseason, the big cash grab that the MLB postseason is for baseball, they want to make sure that they're not jeopardizing that, because we know that's what really this was all about. It's about the money and the huge paycheck that they're going to get by having postseason baseball on television, the expanded playoffs. All of it was money motivated. We get that. And I think that's what this is in response to. Yes, it's because they saw the Cardinals, but it really is them making sure as we get closer to the end of this season, where it's going to be that much more challenging to make up days.
But that's, yeah, absolutely. But just saying, like, well, the CDC guideline, that was what Zach Plesac said last week. Like, look, man, I was just in a group of like 8 or 9 people, and we were like kind of decently far apart. So what's the problem? The CDC says it's fine. Well, baseball is operating under a stricter policy than the CDC guideline. You would say, well, isn't that overkill? I'm like, yes. But the reason why they're doing overkill, first, like me and you, right, Gold? Let's go about our day, normal business, separated the grocery store. We don't have billions of dollars in TV revenue on the line. The reason why the players and them agreed to those stricter guidelines at the time, and the NFL, right? The NFL goes beyond CDC recommended guidelines because they want to make sure this happens. That to me is where, like, just saying, like, well, you know, we're just kind of dialing back to that. I feel like it comes with great risk for the players. And I feel like it's all because of the Cardinals. Like, who else is complaining about this right now? Seriously. Who else is complaining about it? The one dude who tested positive for the Reds? All the guys who tested positive for the Royals are back, so are they the ones complaining? The only trace back on this for we want guys back in 10 days, not 14, or we want guys to be able to apply to come back in 10 days and be back fully in 14, is the Cardinals. They're mad what? That they're not going
to
be a playoff team?
I mean, as much as I love to bag on the Cardinals and St. Louis and all that, I think this is more about any team going forward. They don't want any team going forward missing 15 games because it's going to truly at that point jeopardize the postseason.
If they test positive like a day before the postseason, I'm just gone for the entire postseason. I'm sorry. It's a weird season. Yeah, I want Mike Trout in postseason games. And that's not a good example because of how bad he's been in the how bad his teams have been.
He can't get in the postseason.
But in general, yeah, he doesn't even make it enough. But that's just the reality we are accepting this year. The Royals had to spend 2 weeks without two starting pitchers. They had to spend, and now Brad Keller, like Junis was the positive, who then arm wasn't ready and came back. Keller, right? He positive early on, couldn't get his arm ready. So it wasn't even necessarily COVID-related things. But Dozier, right? Like, yeah, it sucks if it comes later in the year, obviously. But this is not a singular problem to go within baseball. This is just a reality. If you have someone test positive later, it sucks. And I know you're going to be like, forget if you're just even the person who's like, hey, it's not that big a deal. They're going to be healthy. Even in those situations, I'm not talking about what risk they're coming with. What I'm telling you is this is the protocol in place. And I don't think altering that at this stage, honestly, it's also not fair. Like, we're talking about like fairness now of losing those players. It's not fair for the teams who lost those guys for 2 weeks at that time. To speed up the Cardinals' timeline, I mean, they have to deal with players gone for less amount of time. So the competitive disadvantage comes in the back half of the season versus it does now. So whether you're complaining about it now doesn't even make sense.
I mean, if there's one thing we've learned, though, throughout, especially just on the sports end, throughout
trying to navigate fairness isn't necessary.
You're trying
to push up the timeline
because
I don't think
this is about a team-specific fairness thing. This is, I guess, where we just differ on what the reason really is behind it. I really truly believe it's just about the money in the postseason and making sure that can take place without any issue.
Aren't they taking a bigger risk of the postseason taking place if they're allowing positively tested players to re-enter baseball sooner?
No, because based on the CDC guidelines, they're saying that there's actually nothing problematic by going with this updated plan. So no, I don't think so. I think you're eliminating the chance of having an additional game 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 games canceled because you're waiting for that player to be negative for 14 days or whatever, and the CDC is saying, and baseball's basing this off of that, that they feel they can move forward.
But I'm saying waiting longer to say somebody to come back protects the product longer. Taking more time to wait for somebody to come back protects the product because you put less people at risk.
Yeah, or they just use the taxi squad, though. Like, if everybody was using the taxi squad the way they would have, then that wouldn't have been a problem as well.
That rule change,
like,
I will fully listen to.
So that's where baseball is headed. That, and it looks like good news for the Reds and Royals tomorrow. They still got to finish up, though. The Royals do in Minneapolis tonight. We'll talk more specific about where they're at and then the need for a split and a win tonight. and you'll hear it here on 610 Sports Radio. But the bigger problem, like just short term, not ultimately the health issue, has been the umpiring in baseball. And we have seen that as Royals fans here come up a couple times in the last week, and yesterday was another example. I think here's what's happening, and it's something that we should keep an eye on for the National Football League as well. It has been a whole nother level of horrendous this year in terms of umpiring in baseball. And I think what it has been is an announcement that we saw from baseball before this season started, an announcement we just got last week from the National Football League, and that is opt-outs. It's not just players, it is officiating. We know that there have been, what, 7 to 10 different umpires before the season said, hey, for, you know, that maybe they're older, whatever their reason was, it's fine. They decided to opt out. We've seen some NFL officials already opt out for the season that are a little bit older. They don't want to participate for health reasons and everything like that. And so we have seen some obvious missed calls, blown strike calls. And last night or yesterday afternoon was a perfect example of that with Jorge Soler at the plate. My goodness, it was terrible. I think that's what's going on. Unfortunately, we're seeing poor officiating, and we're going to see this happen in the National Football League as well. I think a lot of it has to do with some of the opt-outs that have taken place. Now, that doesn't like excuse it, but I think that is something we should somewhat expect, unfortunately, coming to the NFL. If they're going to have 10 new officials in the NFL as well, there's going to be officials that aren't experienced. There's going to be mistakes, and we're seeing it in baseball right now.
They gotta adopt electronic strike zones. It just doesn't make any sense to keep holding on to this. People go, well, the umpires are worried about their jobs. The minors do some electronic strike zones, like in the Atlantic League. And you know what they do? Still have a guy behind home plate. You know why? Because sometimes electronic systems go down and you need a guy back there as a backup. You also happen to need a guy there to be able to make the call safer out at home, or catcher's interference. Like, that guy's not leaving. All they're saying is, we're just going to make your job easier. Would that be nice? With less criticism. Doesn't that sound good?
As a fan, I saw it firsthand down in the Houston area. One of the independent league teams had the little radar solar panel thing right behind home plate, and or up high, actually attached to the press box. And there still was an ump behind home plate, and it was nice, among other things. That's also, by the way, where they did they tested the new extra inning rules, which I continue to love as well, along with the seventh inning doubleheaders, which
I
have been fantastic.
I like the seventh inning doubleheader better than I thought I would. But it doesn't make sense from a statistical standpoint to just not do it. And I'm not even mad at the umpires. Look, I mean, Brady Singer's got more break on his fastball than anyone in Major League Baseball, like a majority of Major League Baseball pitchers this year. So when that pitch, before he gives up that home run, backends into the strike zone, right? And it's supposed to be strike three. Man, that's really hard to tell. That ball's moving 94 miles per hour, bends back in, or it's moving 87 miles per hour, bends back in. It's a hard thing to notice. I'm not even mad you can't do the job. It's almost impossible. Your eyes can't almost move fast enough to correctly do it. Just solve the problem. Nicky Lopez, there was a whole big thing at the end of the game between him, the bench, the umpire. This was him explaining kind of what went down.
Without fans here, you can hear a lot of stuff, and I think he may have heard something that wasn't portrayed as that. We're hyping up our team. It's the ninth inning. We're trying to, rally, and, it was a strike call or a ball call that was a little down, and we said it was down, and he might have thought we were talking to him or something like that, but... like I said, it's his ninth inning. We're trying to rally, and I don't think we sent anything out of line, but obviously there's no fans in the ballpark, so he might have portrayed that we were saying something to him.
The call was horrendous against Nicky. Horrendous.
Now, Sergio Romo, who he's referencing there, who got upset at the end, and we'll see if there's any carryover at all into that tonight. First pitch against the Twins. They'll wrap up this series 7-10 first pitch, and Vern's pregame gets going at 6 o'clock. Coming up next here, you'll hear from Steve Spagnuolo, the live press conferences here on 610. Also, Tano Passanio, Chad Henne, Willie Gay Jr. But there was something that Clyde Edwards-Helaire told the guys this morning on Fesco in the Morning. Is it achievable or not? We'll get to it next.
Cody and Gold, weekdays 10 to 2, 610 Sports Radio.
Back here on Cody and Gold, your official Chiefs radio partner, 610 Sports Radio, and you'll find exclusive interviews like the one we'll have coming up in the noon hour today with DeMarcus Robinson. Also like the interview that was on this morning with Fesco in the Morning with Clyde Edwards-Helaire in our training camp coverage brought to you by Bud Light. And here in the next 10 minutes or so, expected to go out to the Chiefs practice facility, and you'll hear live from Chiefs defensive coordinator Steve Spagnuolo, also Tano Passanio, Chad Henne, and rookie linebacker Willie Gay Jr. So keep it locked here to 610 Sports Radio. And of course, during the season for game day over on our sister station, you can hear the games on 106.5 The Wolf. And it looks like the practice just winding down or so. And Adam Teicher of ESPN reporting that, well, the good news, Fred, let's start there. The good news part, Clyde Edwards-Helaire was back to work. He was dehydrated reportedly yesterday, so was not participating fully. But unfortunately, backup tight end Ricky Seals-Jones, one of the free agent acquisitions this offseason, was carted off with what looked to be a leg injury. Don't like hearing that. Don't like hearing that at all. We'll see if we get any more information in the next day or so. Unfortunately, Andy Reid's not talking today, so I doubt we're going to get an injury update today on Ricky Seals-Jones. But that's hopefully it's not severe. That's a bummer hearing somebody being carted off, and Ricky Seals-Jones, who would have figured to be the number two tight end this year behind Travis Kelce.
Chiefs did pick up a tight end yesterday roster last. I mean, a convenient timing, I suppose, depending on the nature of the injury, but that's a position where at least one guy takes up 90% of the workload. So, I mean, do you stress way, way, way too much about backup tight end? No. And yeah, if they lost, you know, if Kelce was ever gone for any stretch of time, he'd be in a world of hurt. But also, that's never been an issue, so it's hard to do that. I hope Ricky Seals-Jones is okay. I mean, there was a thought that he could be a productive member of this offense as a number two, especially as a guy who's put up okay numbers in some of his other spots. So as soon as we find out more, we'll let you know.
And I mentioned that Clyde was on this morning with Fesco in the morning, and they talked to him about Patrick Mahomes, but they also talked to him about his own goals for this 2020 season. Here's what he had to say.
Right now, my biggest thing is I like to knock things out, in order. You know, having a crazy goal should always, in your mind, be attainable. Right now, at the bottom of my mirror, right now is rookie of the year, and I feel like that's in my threshold, and I feel like I can get that and grasp that. The biggest thing for me now is understanding my role on the team, understanding the things that I need to do as far as playbook, understanding, getting confidence, not from Pat and everybody else, but just the organization. Everybody should feel like, okay, this is the guy that we drafted from character-wise all the way down to his skill set on the field, and the way that he plays the game. This is everything that we want. So right now, my biggest thing is knocking the things out that I need to do as far as learning the playbook, executing, finding details is everything the NFL is about. So, you know, getting those pinpoint details is something that I've been, you know, drilling myself about. And then at the end of the day, everything else should fall into place. And, you know, that rookie of the year would be very attainable if I just do the things that I need to do on the forefront.
He was talking about the playbook and all that. We've heard him. He feels confident with that. I have no question.
Yesterday and said, I think people said maybe it was disrespectful, but he's like, it's an NFL playbook. If you do the studying you're supposed to do, it makes sense.
So the playbook, based on his comments, and again, it's typically not what you hear from a rookie in an Andy Reid offense, that they're, you know, he said the playbook was easy. We talked about this on the show, I think, 3 or 4 weeks ago, and typically you don't hear that from a rookie whatsoever. He says, though, his goal, he wants to be, among other things, wants to be rookie of the year. Is that achievable? Yeah, it's absolutely achievable. I mean, the news of Damian Williams opting out, the odds went up drastically of that being the case, and he's right around, 10-1 odds or so to be rookie of the year. At least that's where it was at one point. I don't know the latest numbers, but that last check when we discussed it was 10-1. Yeah, he's got a great chance to do that. There's always going to be the challenge of your running back versus a Joe Burrow or Tua, if one of those guys or any of the young quarterbacks goes out and gets enough playing time. You know, is Tua and Herbert going to get enough playing time to be that? We know the quarterback, it's just naturally, it's going to be easier as a quarterback to
quarterback win. Can throw 24 touchdowns and 10 picks and 3,800 yards, and people are like, that's our guy.
Now, I don't know if any of the rookie quarterbacks are doing that this year. Joe
24,
Burrow,
10, and 3,800? That doesn't seem out of question.
I don't know how long it's going to be till we see Herbert. How long till we see Tua? Is Joe Burrow?
Burrow's the guy you got to count on.
Yeah,
that.
Burrow.
Sure.
So Burrow has the best odds to do it. Is it achievable for Clyde? Absolutely. Hey, if it's based off of both you and Serta, what you think he is going to be rookie of the year, because you guys both have him having like 1,500 yards total offense this year, and
Serta had him
Serta
in like
16 touchdowns. 16 touchdowns? Or something.
I think I had him at 10.
He's going to lead the league in touchdowns.
I mean, if that's the case, then we're not even again rookie of the year is not even a problem. You guys are already going again. Put all the money that you have in your savings account right on Clyde if that's the case. I think Clyde's more in the, you know, a little over 1,000 yards, 1,100, 1,150 total yards this season, which, depending on what everybody else does, if he gets enough touch, still could very well be rookie of the year, by the way, very easily. So, no, it's achievable for Clyde, no doubt about that, to be rookie of the year this year.
He should be talking about those type of bigger goals. Like, everybody has to compartmentalize differently to make sure that they stay to their success. And Clyde mentions that, right? He's like, hey, I really am trying to be day-to-day for the things I know I have to get right today. But you need big picture goals at the end of the season. Even Mahomes would occasionally admit he had big picture goals for how to do it. Mahomes now is probably just like, man, I'm trying to win championships. Here's the little things I'm trying to work on. Here's the things I'm trying to work on every day. But I'm trying to win championships. That's the only big goal I'm out here worried about. I'm not worried about MVPs. I'm not worried about 5,000 yards. I'm worried about rings. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, rookie of the year, is an actual obtainable goal. He didn't say he's trying to be league MVP. He didn't say he's trying to lead the league in rushing, which is something running backs eventually can, or lead the league in scrimmage yards. He didn't get anywhere close to those numbers.
Look, I mean,
he just said rookie of the year, which to me, no rookie in the NFL is better positioned than he is because he's in the league's best offense and looks to be used considerably, like a pretty considerably high amount for his position. So I got to think that that should be an obtainable goal for 2020.
It's really him or Joe Burrow, what it appears to me. It's like it's him or Joe Burrow that's going to have the best chance to do it. And Joe Burrow is just going to be because he's the quarterback and he's going to have an opportunity right away. But based off of like 2018 with Barkley and Giants, when he won offensive of rookie of the year, and he had right around like 980 yards or 1,000 yards and 7 touchdowns, and that if that's what, and so like I don't, he doesn't
flash
even,
too. Yeah, like you got to flash sometimes.
Sure, and he's going to have that opportunity in a Chiefs offense. He's going to be everybody. You're not on a bad Giants team like Barkley was. You're on the best team in football, the defending champs too. Like that helps. That helps with
of course it does
as well, and I think that lends in his favor. In fact, Patrick Mahomes even talked about what he's seen from Clyde so far in the first couple padded practices.
Clyde, I think, has done a great job in the reps that he has gotten. I mean, he's stepped in. He's learned the offense. He's not making a lot of mistakes. He's playing fast, and he has an incredible vision. I think that's what's been the biggest thing so far, is the way he's able to run the ball, find the lanes of running in, and catch out of the backfield and get upfield and make plays happen. For him to be able to do that so early, it's a great sign, and he'll keep getting better and better.
I was trying to think this over the weekend, too, about whether it's those comments and certainly how much in Kansas City and now getting even more national attention around Clyde. Once that opt-out for Damian Williams happened, I feel like nationally it blew up even more. He got asked about that, but also just from a Chiefs perspective, other than Mahomes when he was drafted in 2017, even though you knew he wasn't going to start right away, other than that, I'm trying to think, in the last decade or so, players hype this much as a rookie heading into a season.
Like just across the NFL or for the Chiefs?
Let's start with the Chiefs, and then we can, because across the NFL,
there's plenty. Every quarterback every year. Deshaun Watson was hyped this much.
I'm talking in Kansas City, though. Other than Mahomes, you knew he wasn't going to play, though. So I even take Mahomes out of this argument, because I would say a rookie that you knew was going to play his rookie season and has hype, rookie of the year type of hype. When's the last one we could say that about for the Chiefs? I was thinking about this over the weekend.
I mean, they haven't been picking in the first round
lately. So that makes it a little more challenging. But that's what my point. It's been a while, man.
All right, man. Chris Jones is going to be the guy.
It's been a while. And it's harder to do it on a defensive player than an offensive player. Offense is more flashy. We get that.
We talked a little bit about Mecole Hardman, but nowhere close to that. Kareem Hunt didn't have that kind of steam. The third round hurts him.
And Clyde was a first-round pick. So we'll talk more about this. That was just something interesting from over the weekend. Let's go out to Chiefs practice facility right now here on 610 as Chiefs defensive coordinator Steve Spagnuolo is addressing the media.
Feels a little bit like we've been here for a long time, because there was a build-up and a lot of walkthroughs, but we're back out there competing, which is good. So with that, I'll open it up.
Let's go to Sam. Go ahead, Sam.
Hey, Coach. How's it going?
Great, Sam. How are you?
Good. Just – couple real quick ones for you. Breland Speaks back this year. I'm wondering what you've seen from him so far. And then new guy with Tedrick Thompson. What have you seen from him so far?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, Sam. It's a little bit early. I'm big on, you know, the making the assessments in full pads. So we've had three of them. And for those guys, it hasn't been a lot of reps. It took Tedrick a little bit to get going. So he's been in and out. And the one thing we got to do is get Tedrick with the first group so we can see how he functions with those guys. It's unfair sometimes when you're in there with guys that don't know the system just like you don't. But he's working hard. So isn't Breland. It's good to have Breland back. Gives us another body, another option out there. And he's working hard. He really is.
Let's go to Adam Teicher. Go ahead, Adam.
Hey, Steve. How you doing today?
I'm good, Adam. I'm great.
Good. Hey, a couple things. First, I wanted to ask you about a couple of the rookies, Willie Gay and Legarius Sneed, and what you've seen from them so far in a week or so of practice. And also, when Pat makes one of his off-schedule plays, like there were a couple of those yesterday in practice, what does that do to a defense when you think maybe you're in position or he's not in position to make a throw and they're, next thing you know, it's a touchdown?
I just always blame it on the fact that he's got a yellow jersey on and we can't hit him. That's what I tell the guys. Look, he's going to make those plays. I think our guys understand that. But it does challenge us to make sure, you know, when he's scrambling around, I mean, our thing is you got to plaster a receiver. So but everybody find someone. We try to keep the quarterback contained. It's a great challenge for us because we're going to face, certainly in the first three games, quarterbacks similar with athletic ability and able to make those kind of plays. So it's good for us. Going back to give me the two names again, Adam, that you said. You asked me about two.
Willie Gay and L'Jarius Sneed.
Yeah, both guys working hard. You know, I'm hopeful for both of them. Both those guys, Willie especially, love football. That was one of the things that Matt House had identified with coaches and people that had worked with Willie. I think the more guys you can get like that, the better, certainly in defensive football, anywhere on your football team. And LJ plays a position that takes a lot of challenge. I mean, look, he's out there battling. It doesn't always go great. I think mentally both those guys are doing a really good job of keeping their heads in the playbook, and I think they pick things up and have some what I call football get it. So I think that helps us going forward.
Let's go to Mick Schaefer. Go ahead, Mick.
Hey, Coach. You mentioned Speaks. We're going to talk to Tano today as well. You got Taco in the mix and a number of other defensive ends that have seen the field in the NFL. What's that competition like, especially at the one spot? And how's it all going to shake out, you think?
Yeah, we've got to let ways to go to figure that out, but it's nice to have that many options. I mean, Andy says it all the time, and I just repeat it. Anytime you can get a lot of competition at one spot, that's good for us. You get to pick the best players. We'll see how it all shakes out. TK was key for us last year. We didn't have Breland, but he's back. Taco's new. You know, a couple of those other guys. I mean, we've had Alex and we've had Frank. So we just keep them all in the mix. It's nice to have those numbers. And Brendan does a lot of good work with them. So hopefully we can surface and find out how many, whatever that's going to be, that we're going to keep and keep healthy.
Let's go to Nate Taylor. Go ahead, Nate.
Hey, Coach. I want to follow up on two of the guys that Sam mentioned earlier with Breland Speaks and Chadrick Thompson. For Breland Speaks, because this is year two for him into the system, is there something that you may have noticed either early so far in camp or even in the offseason program that you knew going into year two, he's much more prepared to have success, obviously having learned the system previously? And then with Tedrick Thompson, what did you guys see on film that gave you optimism that he could help you out early if necessary?
Yeah, I mean, one thing about Tedrick is he's played in the league. He worked with a guy that worked for me, Andre Curtis, who I got a lot of respect for. And Andre's a good football coach, so I know that Tedrick's been coached up real well. And so I think that helps him, you know, with the certainly early here learning the system. But it's going to be a learning curve. I mean, there's a lot for the safeties to know back there. There's a lot of communication. Breland, you know, the one thing, he was hurt last year, and I would hesitate to say that he's really had 2 years in the system because, you know, we got him into training camp, I believe, and then he got hurt. So he had that background. But it's really been a whole year, and you've got to be out there doing it. It's one thing to learn it in a meeting room, on tape, listening to the coaches. It's another thing to go out and do it. So he's a little bit rusty, but he's not going to rust off. And, again, like I said before, we're hopeful for all those defensive ends there.
Let's go to Matt Derrick. Go ahead, Matt.
Hey, Coach. Good to see you again.
You too.
I know we talked about last year that the new system took a little bit, maybe more time to figure out the rotations than you thought it might last year. But when you did, I mean, you got in a groove at the end of the season. How do you take that into the season and try it and carry it over this year while adding new elements and expanding what you're doing?
Good question. Listen, as a staff, we say it all the time, what we're going through with mask and WebEx meetings and, you know, the challenges of what we're dealing with right now, we're all really glad it's not the first year. It would be really hard. Second year, the guys that have been here that are in the same spots, that's been a tremendous advantage for us. But I will say this, you know, Kendall Fuller's not here. Juan hasn't been out there. There are some spots and some pieces that we got to find to put this thing all together. We're light years away. I think I said this before when we talked that just because you finish at a certain point at the end of 1 year does not mean you pick right up from that particular spot. We got to go back to ground zero. It's still about getting better every day. There's nothing in our brains that says that we're not going to go through some growing pains this year, just like we did last year. That happens every year. And especially with no preseason games, not going against another opponent except for our offense for whatever it is, 5 weeks here, it's going to be a challenge. I think it's going to be a challenge for all defenses across the league. And so there's no guarantees here. We'll try to piece it together as best we can. I am glad, though, that it is the second year and not the first for these guys.
Looks like we've got two more hands up. Let's go Steve and then Pete. Go ahead, Steve.
Hey, Coach, how you doing?
Great, Steve.
Hey, in talking to Tyron earlier this week, he said that he is grateful to you because you understand exactly what buttons to push. I'm interested in your ability to do that, and has it become more difficult after these guys have reached the success that they have?
That's a really good point. I guess we'll find out. I'm glad I'm pushing the right buttons. I'm not sure I always do that. My wife might not say that. But listen, the one thing I've always believed in this league is to have great respect for players. I respect these guys and haven't been with them for a year. I love them. I mean, I love working with them. It's a joy to go out every day and work with Tyron Matthew and all those guys. And so going forward, the point you made is a really good one, you know, pushing buttons after all that success. That can be a challenge. I think about it all the time. I'm always trying to find a niche or something to put up there that will, and I don't think our heads are not level. Like, I don't think our guys are thinking beyond what they should, but it's natural. We talk about keeping a rock solid foundation, and I've put things up that talk about hammers that can break up that foundation. And we talk about those things. So we hit it. I don't hit it all the time. Cause I think sometimes they get sick of me saying things over and over, but I think we hit it enough, and the assistant coaches do a great job too.
Let's go to Pete Sweeney for the last one. Go ahead, Pete.
Hey Steve, thanks for some time. I was just wondering, given the fact that you guys are fully healthy, or for the most part fully healthy along the defensive line, piggybacking off the year two question, does it afford you and Brendan Daly the ability to maybe get a little bit more exotic with some of these blitz pressures in this year, given that they've had that experience last year?
Yeah, that's a hope. I think, you know, the one hard, we're going to lose Mike Pinnell, I think, early in the season with a suspension. So we got to figure out the inside part of it. But on the outside, if we can – listen, we can find out what those guys on the outside we can do. We probably could get a little exotic, but the thing I want to be really careful of is jumping into that without getting back to square one, which it is for us. It's all about a foundation. And, you know, we don't see a lot of run plays right now. Our offense is they're an attack team throwing the ball downfield. I get concerned about us stopping the run. We play a team first game of the season that can run it pretty good. So we'll focus more on that right now and hopefully get them in those third down situations where we can do that.
Thank you, Coach. We appreciate your time.
Thank you all.
So that was Chiefs defensive coordinator Steve Spagnuolo here on 610 Sports Radio, and our training camp coverage brought to you by Bud Light. But I certainly have to start with the last answer there from Spags, from our Chiefs insider. The question was from Pete Sweeney, and
did we know Mike Pinnell was suspended?
Quote from Spags: "We're going to lose Mike Pinnell early in the season, I think, with the suspension. That's news to everybody, but him maybe. That's interesting." That is
did
not
we know
something,
that?
No.
I
no,
don't think
no,
so.
That has not been.
It sounds like he's going through the appeal process.
Did that slip through the cracks somewhere?
Yeah, that's news.
Oopsie Spags.
Yeah, that's not something anybody was aware of.
Now, look, that was in relation to blitz packages and their ability to be like, well, we got to figure out how to be creative on the inside because we might not have Pinnell in the early going. Like, wait, what? Back up on that part.
Yeah, that's
losing Breland. And again, the beginning part of their schedule is difficult. It's a bad time. It's a bad part of the schedule for them to be having guys missing. So that would be news to me and news to
everyone else,
I think, at this point. Apparently, there had been maybe some rumblings around there. Hmm. But it sounds like, Mike Pinnell might be gone for the beginning part of the season, depending on what appeal part. Well, he said suspension. So at that point, you start thinking, test coming back, but we'll find out, I guess.
Yeah.
If depending on where the rest of that sorts itself out, but sounds like we got a little breaking news there from Spags in relation to blitz packages. Good on Pete. Thanks, Pete. forgetting that little news out.
Yeah, that was definitely not expected to hear. That is brand new news to everybody, and we'll see if we get any more information now that that's out there. If we get any more information on specifically what kind of suspension he is facing. Also, I think if we know that an answer at some point's got to happen for Bashaud Breeland, the length of that suspension. If there's an area though where they're deep on defense,
both those guys, defensive
line, they've got depth there. If we're talking a one or two game suspension, they're going to be all right. But that's more just caught off guard and surprised to hear that news. That was not something anybody was really talking about.
You don't want to lose Bashaud Breeland and Mike Pinnell for three or four games, because then you start talking about impacting that Ravens game. And whether, that's the most important or not, that's certainly there.
All right, let's go back out to the Chiefs practice facility with Chiefs backup quarterback, Chad Henne.
Good. How you doing, Adam?
Good, thanks. Wanted to ask you a couple things. First, do you see many parallels between now and 2011, the year of the lockout, and trying to prepare for a season? And also, you're not going to have any preseason games to get ready for season. I know as backup quarterback, you sometimes feel those preseason game reps are really important to get used to the game speed. Just wanted to ask you what it's going to be like maybe trying to get ready for a season without having that to help you prepare.
Yeah, I mean, the first question with the parallels to 2011, I mean, definitely similar but different with instance of not getting to go to the gyms, kind of being on your own at home with everything being closed. But with guys getting together, outside a little bit, it was beneficial, but this year it was just shut down. So we really had to just like jump on our feet this year, get after the guys. Once we got here, we had that acclimation period, 2 weeks that we got out there, went to a couple high schools and got some good work in there. But other than that, it's been difficult, but we made the best of it and done well. And then with the preseason games, yeah, I mean, it's definitely going to be difficult, but at the same time, Coach Reed puts a great schedule for us together, gets in all the reps that we can, and really gets us ready and go on for the season.
Let's go to Nate Taylor. Go ahead, Nate.
Hey, Chad, good to see you. I have two questions for you. With the understanding of you're going into year three in the offense, understanding what Andy is trying to do in terms of adding new things, are there things that you've identified that you want to work on specifically or improve to get ready if needed when the season does start? And then secondly, having a young guy like Jordan Tamu enter the quarterback room, just what have you noticed from him, both in the classroom and the things he can do maybe in the practice field?
Yeah, I mean, I think just going in for me to improve, I mean, obviously year three, it's definitely beneficial to be in the same system for 3 years in a row. I feel confident in myself, confident to go out there and perform. But at the same time, it's just getting to know the guys again, getting timing down, spatial awareness out there on the field, understanding the route concepts, really digging deep what specific routes that we're trying to accomplish against each defense and attacking it that way. And, feeding off of Patrick as well. I mean, he's obviously been in it. He's played a lot of games in it and kind of getting his nuances, where to put his eyes in different places to get certain routes open. And with Jordan, I mean, he's been phenomenal. I mean, he's a young, talented guy. Obviously, he was in the XFL, had some experience there, but he came in, he's willing to learn. Has done some really good things. Today was a great opportunity for him to go out there against doing the scout team for the defense and did a really nice job for him. So he's going to keep learning, pick our brains, each and every day. But I think he definitely has a great upside.
Let's go to Sam Mellinger. Go ahead, Sam.
Hey, Chad. Good to see you. I had two questions for you. One is there anything specific that you noticed different with Patrick this year as opposed to last year? I know we're early in this. And the other thing I was wondering, I know everybody's being as careful as they can be, right? But there's been talk of like quarterbacks kind of, quarantining. I'm just worried if you personally, just as a quarterback, if you feel like you're taking even more responsibility, more extremes to sort of stay safe right now.
Yeah, I mean, for Patrick, I mean, it's going out there and being the best leader he can be. I think he's improved on that tremendously, even from the day one since I've been here. Really getting hold of the guys, preaching to them what this offense is all about, what he wants from them, what they need from him. And, I mean, he's the ultimate teammate. We heard it previously, he's a competitor each and every day. He's out there trying to beat our defense left and right. And, it's just his mindset. Each and every day he's out there to win and to be the best leader for this team and win for this organization. So he's definitely improved on that year in and year out and has done a phenomenal job there. And what was, sorry, your second question then?
Yeah, just if as a quarterback, if you feel like you're taking even more extremes, yeah.
Yep. Yeah, I think so. I mean, obviously, you know, I'm aware of what my family's doing. They're actually coming out today. So making sure I know exactly where they're at each and every day, you know, they're taking care of themselves with wearing a mask outside, being safe, knowing who you're around. And then especially myself, you know, just going to be a homer. I mean, this is important. This is my job. I don't want to lose my job just, you know, being out a couple weeks just because of getting coronavirus.
All right, looks like we've got two more. Let's go Robert and then Adam. Go ahead, Robert.
Hey, Chad. Just wanted your thoughts on – can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay, just wanted to get your thoughts on what went into your decision to kind of play this season, you know, with the COVID thing and everything, and what was your thought process when you decided to play this year?
Yeah, I mean, it didn't take long. I mean, I made a commitment back in March when I signed here. And even though, you know, this pandemic has hit us hard, I just felt, you know, I made the decision. I'm here for my teammates. I'm here to do my best ability as I can for this team. And, you know, I'm here. There's no doubt about it. I never look back. My family was fine with it. And we're young and healthy, and we're just going to go forward from here.
Let's go to Adam Teicher. Go ahead, Adam.
Hey, Chad, one last thing. You, as you mentioned earlier, you started the offseason as a free agent, but re-signed. And you certainly weren't the only guy who re-signed on this team this year. It seems like guys really like to play here. Are there some things you can put your finger on as to why guys, what is it about this place where guys like to play? Other than you're just getting a chance to play for another ring?
Yeah, I mean, obviously number one is Coach Reed. I mean, he's definitely one of the best coaches I've been around. You know, he knows the ins and outs of offense. He knows the ins and outs of defense. I mean, he's been around for a while. He's a winning coach. And, you know, guys want to be around winning atmospheres. And obviously the Super Bowl helps. But at the same time, when you're around the guys that want to compete each and every day and fight for one another, I think it just is definitely something you want to be a part of. You know, I've throughout my career, ups and downs, you know, winning, losing, the winning's the way to go. And here we have a great tradition here and a lot of great people around us.
Chad, we appreciate you. Thank you.
All right, that's Chiefs backup quarterback Chad Henne here on 610 Sports Radio. Our training camp coverage brought to you by Bud Light. That was asked about just in preparations as a quarterback this year. There's no quarantining quarterbacks. We know the NFL's not allowing that, as Andy had addressed that a few weeks ago, but
take a little extra precaution.
I mean, if there's any year where the backup quarterback's gonna play, this is definitely that year. Nobody wants to see that, but there's that chance of a COVID positive test and you're out for a week or 2 weeks.
Yeah, or a couple, and they're going to need you for a couple of weeks. By the way, you're listening to 610 Sports Radio, KCSP Kansas City, WDAF HD2 Kansas City, a radio.com sports station. But when it comes to how they maneuver that, yeah, I mean, you kind of hope, like Sam is essentially saying, like, you take a little extra precaution, knowing that, like, not just normal injury stuff that could come up in any given year that might require your services in a season, but because, like, this thing lingers and hovers and your job might be, you know, it'd be a similar question you could actually ask Jordan Tamu if you wanted. Like, knowing that you are technically a little bit closer because there's this thing that didn't exist to keep people on an injured reserve list, do you take those? And I assume all quarterbacks, because that's just one extra thing you don't want to do that. But again, it's an individual basis, and we know that. Everybody handles their business differently in this league. Chad Henne seems like a pretty responsible guy.
And teams, I mean, we know the additional roster spots with the practice squad and how you can have more veterans than you typically could and some of the requirements there. I wonder, are teams going to keep just more quarterbacks naturally? We'll talk more about that, but let's go back out to Chiefs practice facility. Tano Passanio talking to the media right now.
Let's start with Mick Schaefer. Go ahead, Mick.
Hey, Tano, just wondering how important last year was for you, the getting on the field that much more, starting those games, getting those sacks, you know, a couple in the playoffs as well. And what's the next step? What are you looking to do here in 2020?
Well, I'm always looking to grow, and especially, you know, making those key sacks or those key plays and then being able to play in the Super Bowl, being able to win the Super Bowl, just like boost my confidence, boost our whole team confidence, knowing like, we know what we are, and we know exactly what we need to do it again.
Let's go to Nate Taylor. Go ahead, Nate.
What's up, Tano?
What's up, Nate?
Hey, man. I wanted to ask you two questions. The first for you is getting that experience, particularly in the playoffs last year, I know helped you a ton. Just going into year two, knowing that you're sort of solidified in your position, just what does it mean to have continuity of knowing what you're doing, the sort of position you're at, and being with the same amount of guys, just what that does for your confidence? And then secondly, I remember asking you last training camp about your relationship with Breland Speaks and the fact that you guys both sort of switched positions back together in Steve Spagnuolo's system, going back to DN. Just what's it been like to see his progress these last few weeks as you guys get ready for the season?
I mean, yeah, year two in this defense, you know, you get a lot more comfortable. You get a lot more comfortable with what the guys around you are doing. You get the whole scheme. You know why Coach Spags is calling something in a certain situation. And I think just that that continuity that you said, that's there. You know, that synergy, that energy that we all come together as one is there. And I mean, Breland, he's coming along for sure. Like, he's been in his playbook. He's been studying. He knows our defense pretty well, and he hopped right in like it was nothing.
All right, let's go to Pete Sweeney. Go ahead, Pete.
Hey, Tano. Was curious, this past offseason, it allows you and everybody a chance to self-scout. I was wondering where you kind of gauge yourself when it comes to rushing the passer and what you look forward to in this year.
Well, you know, I've had a whole nother off season to work on that and really just perfect my craft. You know, it was a weird off season, but, I made it work. I got a lot of time to myself to just kind of do what you said, self-scout and be able to tweak those little things. And I'm excited to see what happens.
Let's go to Sam McDowell. Go ahead, Sam.
Hey, Tano. Spags mentioned something to us earlier today about the fact that Patrick Mahomes scrambling kind of helps you prepare for facing guys like Deshaun Watson and Lamar Jackson that you're going to be facing the first 3 weeks. I'm wondering your perspective on that.
Oh, yeah. It's a lot of help. I mean, that guy can run. That guy will bounce out the pocket. He'll go 10 yards back down the field and, you know, throw some crazy sidearm ball. Those plays that you expect from those top-tier quarterbacks. And I really feel like that helps us as a defense as a whole prepare, you know, our backfield sticking on guys longer, us continuing to rush relentlessly and just track them down.
Looks like we've got two more. Let's go Matt Derrick and then Seren. Go ahead, Matt.
Hey, Tano, good to see you again.
Yeah, you too, Matt.
This is the first time in your career going into a season not having a contract for next year and knowing, you know, what your situation will be. Is there a sense of urgency this year that, you know, you're playing to try and impress the Chiefs? You know, maybe you're trying to impress other teams that get that contract?
I mean, I've always been playing to impress everybody, you know. Like, I mean, I play for myself. I play for my mom. I play for everybody back home. I work hard every day, and I kind of let the other stuff kind of work itself out, you know.
Go to Seren for the last
You're listening to Tano Passanio here on your official Chiefs radio partner, 610 Sports Radio. Still expecting to hear from rookie linebacker Willie Gay Jr. We'll get back out to the Chiefs practice facility.
When they came to you and said, hey, we want you to stand up, we want you to do drops, and then is there anything now that you're back in what, you know, seemingly the position you were drafted for and what you kind of just, not to stereotype you, right, but you look like a defensive lineman, right, with your size and everything. But is there anything you still are able to take away from that time that you did spend working as a linebacker?
Oh, yeah. I'm able to take a bunch back because, you know, we're still dropping. We're still doing stuff that outside linebackers did, and I'm standing up sometimes. It honestly gave me just more of a, like, plethora and variety of moves, stances, so guys don't really know what I'm going to be doing. And just playing at that outside linebacker position, I learned defense as a whole, so my defensive knowledge definitely has been growing and still is.
Tano, we appreciate you. Thank you, sir.
All right, that's Tano Passanio out at the Chiefs practice facility. Our training camp coverage here on 610 Sports Radio, brought to you by Bud Light. As I mentioned, we will hear from rookie linebacker Willie Gay Jr. here momentarily. Also, exclusively on your Chiefs radio partner, coming up in the noon hour at 12:10, our one-on-one conversation with Chiefs wide receiver DeMarcus Robinson. You can tell, I mean, that's now between Spags and Tano Pasaniel. A lot of questions about Breland Speaks, as it's a huge year for him. And even Spags, though, said, you know, it doesn't, it's really not even a full two seasons in his system yet. He doesn't view it that way, at least. And then Tano was speaking highly about Breland Speaks and what they have seen from him so far.
There's a lot on the line for Tano and Breland.
Mm-hmm.
And Taco and Pinnell, if you want to look at it that way, depending on what his suspension comes from. They got a lot of guys on the defensive line on essentially one-year prove-it deals across them. And I think in a perfect world, Gold, they find the guy they're willing to give that two-year, that Ogba deal, right? That two-year $12 to $15 million deal for, because they found the production they wanted out of that player. And I think Tano and Breland seem like kind of obvious options inside of that, but we haven't seen them give you the kind of production. Like Tano Pasaniel, I've seen to be like, I could see him getting a $12 to $15 million deal. If he can have the same level of production he had last season. Breland Speaks, I don't know. I mean, Spags, even two guests ago, right, was saying like, I wouldn't go as far to say he's been in the system for 2 years, because you really do actually have to be out there doing it in order to justify. Now, there was a lot of hype around him before he got hurt last season and how he looked in training camp. So maybe just 1 year in that system would do it. But he's like, look, I'd hesitate to say this is year two if you haven't really been in that system long enough or been back at the defensive line. But both him and Tano Pasaniel were put at the wrong position. Like, we're going to make you stand up outside 3-4 linebackers. Like, no, it doesn't fit their skill set. So under Spagnuolo, they should be in better positioning. That's what I like to hear from
them. Well, those I guys. Think that's why K-Pass had a very nice season a year ago.
Yes, they were put, and that's why I'm hopeful for Breland Speaks, to be honest. Because they're going to be in a natural position, Gold. There's a big difference between being put in the wrong position for years with Bob Sutton and actually being a guy with your hand in the ground, you know, defensive lineman where you might actually succeed. And did succeed, by the way, in college.
And how does the rookie linebacker Willie Gay Jr. fit in? We're going to hear from him momentarily and wondering how camp has gone from him. And knowing that that linebacker core is an area, if you were to pinpoint specifically on defense, that they could use significant upgrade. And they went out and spent a second-round pick on Willie Gay Jr. And how quickly can he get up to speed with no preseason games also? I feel like at the linebacker spot, that more than Clyde, it's Willie Gay Jr. where not having preseason games, to me, hurts as far as availability week one, week two, week three of the season.
Absolutely. And that's, well, those are those suspensions we're going to find out.
Yes.
Because while they do have really good depth at the defensive line, I would tell you that no one quite does what Pinnell does. What's Taco's your next best button? That was the guy we were talking about. Like, is he even going to make the roster? I mean, he certainly is now.
Oh, with that expanded.
If there's a suspension, with the expanded train, with the expanded
practice squad,
where essentially they can just hold that guy, not hostage, but they can hold him without another team being able to get him. And now a possible suspension for Pinnell, which you were doing research on.
Yeah,
they're in a tough position.
Yeah, the Pinnell news again, it was brand news to everybody when Spags was talking, and I don't know if he necessarily knew that it was not information anybody knew, but essentially revealing that there's a suspension facing Mike Pinnell heading into the start of the season, and we don't know exactly what the suspension is for, but if you go back in history, whether it's 2016, 2017, there had been a couple substance abuse policy suspensions. Now the NFL with the new CBA had changed the criteria for that, and based off of the old criteria, you'd be talking about multiple games. What's tricky about it, this would be the third or fourth violation of the substance abuse policy, if that's in fact what this is. We don't know exactly what
we don't know the clarity is
now under the new policy. If it's your first violation, this is not, though. If it's your first violation, you just lose a half of a game check. The second violation, a week of pay. Third violation, 2 weeks salary. It's the fourth that's a three-game fine, but you don't actually get suspended games until you get into the fourth and fifth violation. What we don't know is, did that reset? Like, how, you know, are you already in that program? Is there a carryover that happens from before? If so, that might be why we're talking about a game or two or three game suspension. And is there an appeal process? That's what we got to figure out.
And he's fought the league pretty hard in the past
lawsuit.
On these.
They went to federal lawsuit in 2017 with the Packers. Mike Pinnell.
He's not afraid to go to battle.
NFL. Yeah, third year at the time, he was a third-year pro. He filed a lawsuit in Ohio federal court alleging the NFL and the NFLPA failed to satisfy, you know, the CBA rules and everything. CBA's changed since then. He ultimately didn't end up sending it. The Packers cut him at the time as he was suspended twice in one season.
By the way, while we await Willie Gay, a little news out of baseball, the Tigers announced that Casey Mize will make his major league debut on Wednesday. That's the number one overall draft pick from the 2018 draft. That's the same draft that obviously Brady Singer was a part of. Just a little baseball news.
It was news when he wasn't on that roster beginning of the season. It was clear what direction the Tigers were going. Now, the Tigers have struggled here recently, losers of five in a row. Let's get a break in here on 610 Sports Radio, your official Chiefs radio partner. We'll get back out to the Chiefs practice facility with Willie Gay Jr., and we'll also get into our Chiefs Red Half Hour.
Cody and Gold, weekdays 10 to 2, 610 Sports Radio.
Dive into the start of summer at Whole Foods Market. Check out their Summer Splash event with sales on fresh organic produce, organic strawberries, and a fan favorite sale on Ben & Jerry's and Talenti. Explore deals on grill-friendly meats like organic air-chilled chicken breast, beef and chicken kebabs, all with no antibiotics ever from our meat department. Plus, grab easy sides from prepared foods and cool off with refreshing drinks. Kick off your summer and shop in store or online at Whole Foods Market today.